down. This is why they're buying ready-to-eat meals to last. This is why they're buying gold and crypto. They think the whole thing is going down. So,
and why Elon Musk is trying to have so many children, at least 14 at this point, but he's actually explicitly texted it saying, we've got to do this much faster, as he proposed to one of the women he has children with, saying, we got to start using surrogates.
So they don't believe in the future, is the bottom line. And that is, you know, I think I've been in a lot of progressive spaces in recent months where we've talked about building these very broad coalitions, including with people who we don't entirely disagree with. I've never encountered a potential coalition more broad than the idea of, how about if we believe in this world? How about if we believe in the future? Because we're up against people who are actively betting against the future, right? Not just actively betting against it, but fueling the fires that are burning this world, actively fueling it. So I think that if we have the courage really to look at the bleakness of what they believe in, which is an apocalyptic future, then we have our work cut out for us of being the people who actually believe in this realm, in this world, in the beauty of creation and of each other.
Naomi Klein, I want to thank you for being with us. Award-winning journalist, author, columnist. We'll link to your piece with Astor Taylor, The Rise of End Times Fascism. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
KBOO Portland.
Hey, everybody. This is Michael Van Cleek, Vice President of KBOO's Board of Directors. The KBOO Board is recruiting new directors. KBOO's Nominating Committee is holding virtual information sessions from now through June. All KBOO members are eligible for board election. Black, Indigenous, and people of color are especially encouraged to apply. KBOO's Board of Directors guides the station's strategic plans and represents the interests and visions of our members. More information and meeting times can be found at kboo.fm/boardrecruiting, all one word. Thank you for considering board service.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson debuts his plan to balance Portland's budget.
OHSU and Legacy Health will not merge after all.
And 2 days remain before the real ID deadline.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 5th, 2025. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Portland Mayor Keith Wilson debuted his budget plan to fill the major shortfall in the city's finances. He plans to make big cuts to the Parks Department and the Permitting Bureau. Summer programs for kids would stay, but trash pickup and maintenance would be cut back for city parks. 180 positions are on the chopping block. That also includes some administrative staff that work on equity and community outreach. Deputy city administrators would also have their raises and cost of living adjustments frozen. Cutting costs account for closing some of the gap, but new revenue is a part two. Wilson proposes to tap some one-time discretionary funding and some unguaranteed state funds. He also wants to increase the city fee for rideshare companies, bringing it up from 65 cents to $1.30 per ride. Wilson has left the Portland Clean Energy Fund intact, unlike his predecessor, Ted Wheeler, who tapped the fund to backfill budget shortfalls last year. Part of the reason the budget shortfall is so big is because of Wilson's ambitious plan to create 1,500 overnight shelter beds by this December. That tacks on some $28 million to the shortfall. Portland City Council will weigh in at their meetings on Wednesday, and councilors will start working on amendments to Wilson's budget proposal. The budget must be finished by the end of June.
Oregon Health and Sciences University and Legacy Health will not be merging, according to an announcement today. OHSU and Legacy are two of the largest healthcare systems in the state, and they've been working on a merger for 20 months. OHSU was planning to buy Legacy and invest $1 billion in upgrading their facilities. Now, the merger is off. The merger was before an Oregon Health Authority Oversight Committee for approval prior to this announcement. Consumer advocates pushed against the merger, saying it would be bad for consumers, creating higher prices and fewer places to get care. The hospital system said the merger would have helped make them more competitive and improve each of their finances. Legacy and OHSU have faced financial difficulties in recent years. OHSU says they'll have a $95 million deficit this year. Legacy Health ended last year with 182 days of cash on hand. In an email to staff, OHSU's interim president and board chair wrote, quote, "After careful consideration of the evolving operating environment, the organizations have determined that the best way to meet the needs of the communities they serve is to move forward as individual organizations. OHSU and Legacy will remain focused on each health system's individual strategic objectives with the goal of remaining well-positioned to continue supporting their people, patients, and communities," end quote.
Voters in Multnomah County should have received their May special election ballots in the mail. Portland voters will choose Portland Public School Board members, along with making a decision on Measure 26-259, the Portland Public School Bond. The bond supports health, safety, and learning and would continue to fund the upgrades to local elementary, middle, and high school buildings. It would also go towards infrastructure improvements at a similar level as the original measure in 2017. Voters can find a list of official ballot drop sites online at multco.us/dropsites. If voters do not receive a ballot by Thursday, May 8th, they're encouraged to call the county elections office at 503-988-VOTE. That's also 8683. Once again, that's 503-988-VOTE or 8683. Signed and completed ballots must be received no later than Tuesday, May 20th, 2025, before 8 p.m. Multnomah County elections officials remind voters to be sure and remember to sign the outside envelope of the ballot. They point out that your signature is your identification. If the ballot isn't signed or the signature does not match what they have on file, they will reach out to remedy your ballot.
After this Wednesday, May 7th, people will need a real ID card or a passport to fly around the U.S. for real this time. The enhanced driver's licenses will finally become required for air travel in the U.S. after years of delays. To get a real ID, Oregonians must go to the Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, with documents that prove their identity, date of birth, and lawful status in the U.S., plus two documents proving where they live. That could include bills addressed to your home or a rental agreement. It costs $30 to add a real ID to a standard license. Appointments right now are booked 2 weeks out, and DMVs across Oregon have been very busy as the deadline approaches. Only about 37% of Oregonians have their real ID so far. It's not the end of the world if you don't have one by the time the deadline comes. Folks can still board air travel with a passport. Regular driver's licenses are still good for other things, like buying age-restricted items and proving the ability to drive. The creation of the Real ID dates back to a law passed in 2005. The law says the IDs will be needed to enter certain federal buildings, but so far that only applies to nuclear power plants and military bases. Oregonians can find more information about what documents they'll need for a Real ID on the DMV website at dmv2u.oregon.gov.
Since its launch in 2017, Oregonians have saved nearly $350 million for retirement through Oregon Saves, an automatic IRA savings account. As advocates of the program say savings for retirement is essential for people and the state. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Oregonians have saved nearly $350 million for retirement through Oregon Saves, a program that lets employees without workplace plans automatically contribute to an IRA. Now, over 60% of Oregon workers have access to a retirement savings plan, one of the highest rates in the country. AARP Oregon, led by State Director Bandana Shrestha, helped launch Oregon Saves in 2017, the first program of its kind in the nation.
It really is very wonderful that we were able to innovate and lead the country in a program that's so meaningful and so impactful. And I hope that people really take advantage of it.
Although more than 1 million private sector workers across the country have enrolled in state retirement savings programs, research shows nationwide 1 in 5 Americans over the age of 50 have no retirement savings. Ryan Mann is with the Oregon Treasury Savings Network that oversees Oregon Saves. He says research shows people are 15 times more likely to save when it happens through a payroll deduction at their job.
Oregon Saves is attempting to fill that gap by providing a free way for employers to help their employees save, and once they're enrolled in the program, an easy way for the workers to have it happen automatically.
AARP Oregon's Shrestha says retirement savings are not only important for individuals, they also alleviate some of the financial pressures that extended family or friends may feel who are providing care as people age, which can be costly.
It gives you choices, both in terms of how you lead your life, but also how you were able to extend generosity and to give to your community, to your family.
Research shows that women, people of color, and lower wage workers are all less likely to have access to a traditional retirement account. And Mann says Oregon Saves is designed to help close intergenerational wealth gaps. People can sign up and find more information at OregonSaves.com. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Canada's prime minister doubles down on his country's independence. Trump refuses to say who has due process rights. And the DOJ sues several states over climate laws. With more on these stories, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
What someone wants and what is reality and what the Canadian people clearly have stated, virtually without exception, is this will never, ever happen.
In his first press conference since winning election, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney repeated they won't become the 51st American state. Carney's Liberal Party won a huge come-from-behind victory by campaigning against President Donald Trump's trade war and demands to make Canada part of the U.S. This comes after 60% of Puerto Ricans voted last year to have a ballot referendum on statehood. That could only happen through an act of Congress, which looks unlikely. Meanwhile, during an interview with NBC's Meet the Press, Trump was noncommittal about who gets due process under the 5th and 14th Amendments. When asked about U.S. citizens and green card holders wrongly deported in some cases to an El Salvador supermax prison, Trump refused to say if they should have legal protections as granted in the Constitution. Courts have ruled clearly they do. Trump is ordering the Federal Bureau of Prisons to not only reopen California's Alcatraz prison, but to expand it as well. The Justice Department is suing Hawaii, Michigan, New York, and Vermont for laws addressing climate change. State climate superfund laws mean fines for the largest greenhouse gas emissions, but a new White House executive order charges the Attorney General with counteracting such moves. Kit Kennedy with the Natural Resources Defense Council says the AG's lawsuits are baseless.
They run afoul of the Constitution and multiple federal laws, which make clear states have the authority to shape their own energy and environmental pathways.
The DOJ says the state's actions violate the Constitution and are preempted by the Clean Air Act, which calls on the EPA to regulate power plant pollutants. New York's law is on track to collect up to $75 billion for polluting companies over 25 years. A new study says it's now possible to pinpoint specific companies that can be held accountable for climate change. Report co-author Justin Mankin with Dartmouth College says his team calculated a price tag for one climate hazard, extreme heat caused by carbon dioxide and methane emitted by more than 100 companies over 3 decades. He compares it to drug makers' role in opioid addiction and says they haven't been excused because they make breakthrough medicines and vaccines.
It doesn't absolve them for their role in, say, generating the opioid crisis. And courts ruled they had a role in generating the opioid crisis and needed to compensate harmed individuals for that.
Last month, the Department of Education shut the regional Head Start office for Michigan and neighboring states, putting staff on administrative leave. Advocates worry cuts to Head Start could derail a successful and growing Michigan school readiness program. Steve Barnett with the National Institute for Early Education Research says it's coming just as the state is struggling to fund preschool for more than 40,000 students.
These reports of potential further cuts come at a time when we know the pandemic funds will go away because the emergency has receded, but states still have to come up with the dollars to fill those in.
Critics argue the program's short-term gains in literacy and social and emotional development fade by first grade and say early childhood education should be handled at the state or local level. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for Coast Range Radio, protecting eelgrass and rocky habitats with Oregon Ocean Alliance. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knocks Radio. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of about 43 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny and warm with a high of 80. Today in history, in 1809, Mary Keyes becomes the first woman awarded a U.S. patent for a technique of weaving straw with silk and thread for making hats. The quote of the day is from Danish philosopher Søren Kierkegaard. Born this day in 1813, he said, quote, "If I have ventured wrongly, very well. Life, then, helps me with its penalty. But if I haven't ventured at all, who helps me then?"
I'll just get the flute out and just hit a few notes. You know, it's not anything I have to do, but I just said that seems to be something that'll help. That can open up a whole day for me. I can go somewhere and somebody says, "You look like you've."
The Trump administration plans to roll back clean energy tax credits, which could have big implications for people's utility bills. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull. A new report shows the Trump administration's plans to repeal clean energy tax credits could increase energy bills for households, including those in Indian country, especially in the West. The Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel reports.
U.S. households could see their annual energy costs rise significantly by the end of the decade if Congress repeals the Inflation Reduction Act's tax credits. That's according to independent research firm Rhodium Group, which estimated price changes in electricity, gasoline, and natural gas. In many parts of our region, household energy bills could jump $250 or more, which is higher than the anticipated national average. That includes Nevada, Colorado, New Mexico, Utah, and Arizona. Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana could see their energy bills climb just over $100 a year by the end of the decade. Report author Ben King.
If the motivation behind some of these policy changes is to try to reduce energy costs, our evidence suggests that certainly these policy changes pull in the opposite direction of that.
Right now, household electricity costs are relatively flat across the Mountain West compared to a year ago. That's according to the Federal Energy Information Administration. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
An unusual protest in British Columbia that's seen by some as a form of justice may be going too far, authorities say. The family of a man accused of a targeted killing on the northern archipelago of Haida Gwaii has been banished from the community. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Tyson Young was charged with second-degree murder after a member of the Haida Gwaii community of Skittagat was killed by a vehicle. Police say Luke Pearson was the victim of a targeted homicide. Several members of Young's family fled after they say they were threatened by residents of the community. Then their homes were bulldozed, and local businesses said anyone associated with the accused was not welcome in their shops. The family was essentially evicted and banished from Haida Gwaii. During the journey, they were prevented from sleeping, eating, or refueling in other indigenous territories. Protesters gathered along the route with signs saying, "Justice for Luke." Others followed the convoy in their own vehicles, sometimes for hours. Smogolgam is a hereditary chief of the Wet'suwet'en. nation. He was also one of the protesters.
Our ancestors, whenever somebody was exiled from their own territories, they're expelled from their territory. Then as they're leaving, their neighboring territories and all the allies that they've got are not allowed to serve them. They're expected to pass through the territory and continue on. And that's kind of what we're doing here. We're upholding our old laws.
Other leaders say a number of indigenous communities have been struggling with drug deaths, especially among young people. And this protest is indicative of the frustrations that many are feeling. Police have been monitoring the family's journey, and out of an abundance of caution, a police escort was provided. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A farm in Salem, Oregon that teaches traditional ecological knowledge to youth has just had some federal funds unfrozen. After President Trump took office this year, many federal agencies have weathered cuts and cancellations. That includes the USDA, which had previously approved three grants to Elderberry Wisdom Farm. Board President Rose Hybear.
The roots of traditional ecological knowledge are grounded in our spirituality. And a lot of people have forgotten their traditions, and we need to restore our own native spirituality and our relationship with our oldest grandmother, the Mother Earth.
Hybear says U.S. Representative Andrea Salinas helped restore a grant worth $750,000. Elderberry Wisdom Farm is now looking for interns to do native stewardship practices. One will be planting trees in a lower-income area of Salem.
We have heat waves here in Salem. When you've got a low tree canopy, it can be 30 degrees hotter than in the more prosperous neighborhoods. So we're really committed to help our ecosystem and to help our young people to get into careers that are more fulfilling to them.
Hybear says funding remains a concern as the internship program's account will dry out next year. You're listening to National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
A 2024 heat wave in Australia decimated corals in the Great Barrier Reef. A team of scientists tracked more than 400 corals that experienced intense ocean heat last year. More than half the corals died. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Australia's Great Barrier Reef hosts a dazzling array of corals, which create a home for animals like fish and sea turtles. As a popular tourist destination, the reef also provides billions to the Australian economy. But last year, a months-long ocean heat wave decimated many of the corals in the Great Barrier Reef. Maria Byrne is a marine biologist at the University of Sydney.
It just kept warming. The heating was intense.
Coral contains special algae that give them their color and provide them with food. But when the ocean gets too hot, the coral lose those algae and become pale, starve for food, and vulnerable to disease. This is called bleaching. Last year, Byrne and her colleagues tracked more than 400 corals in the Great Barrier Reef. By April, 80% of those corals had bleached. Sometimes corals can recover after bleaching, but if a heat wave lasts too long, they may not be able to. And by July, 53% of the bleached corals Byrne was monitoring had died. So as the climate warms and ocean temperatures rise, the risks to coral reefs will likely grow.
This 2024 event reinforces the need for climate action as soon as possible.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
A new report published in the journal Nature offers a tool for potentially recouping the costs of extreme weather events linked to climate change. Researchers say it's now possible to trace specific climate damages back to emissions from individual fossil fuel companies. Eric Gladys reports from Colorado.
As Boulder and local governments across the U.S. turn to courts to pay for rebuilding after wildfires, floods, and other extreme weather events linked to a changing climate, a new study shows it's now possible to pinpoint specific companies that could be held accountable. Report co-author Justin Mankin with Dartmouth College says using advanced modeling, his team calculated a price tag for the impacts of extreme heat, just one climate hazard, linked to carbon dioxide and methane emissions from 111 companies over 30 years.
So the world would be $20 trillion more wealthy had those companies found ways to mitigate the extreme heat impacts of those emissions.
Researchers found that 10 fossil fuel companies, including Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Saudi Aramco, were responsible for half of the total losses. Oil and gas companies have argued in court that it was not possible to assign blame to their company's carbon or methane molecules in the atmosphere compared with all the other molecules that have been released. They've also noted that oil and gas production has produced numerous public benefits and wealth. Using emissions data and advanced climate models, Mencken says it's now possible to see what the world would look like if any particular corporation had not produced emissions. He adds that other industries haven't gotten off the hook, including Big Pharma, just because they produce breakthrough medicines and vaccines.
It doesn't absolve them for their role in, say, generating the opioid crisis. And courts have ruled that they had a role in generating the opioid crisis and needed to compensate harmed individuals for that.
Hundreds of lawsuits have been filed to hold corporations and trade associations accountable for climate damages. Colorado's Supreme Court has heard oral arguments but has not yet ruled on a case brought by San Miguel County and the city and county of Boulder seeking compensation from ExxonMobil and Suncor Energy. This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
Having a lot of money in your bank account or seeing your child consistently get straight A's in school can help with your family's well-being. But they don't tell the whole story. Experts say other indicators, such as mental health, have to be factored in. Mike Bowen has the story in Minnesota.
May is Family Wellness Month, and Minnesota households are encouraged to work on goals beyond the surface level of success. One expert says family members can explore dimensions that go a long way in shaping well-being. In a post-pandemic world, University of Minnesota Extension educator Sharon Powell acknowledges that society isn't as laser-focused on career or academic success in defining how well a person or family is doing. Physical health should be near the top, but Powell adds that with mental health a bigger priority these days, it's one way in which households can get a sense of whether or not loved ones are thriving. She says a good frame of mind opens more doors.
You feel happy and content and like you're contributing to your family's well-being and to your community and even beyond.
Powell says if you notice sudden mood changes or a family member becomes withdrawn, it might be good to inquire about their emotional state and whether it needs to be addressed. On the topic of money, Powell says amassing wealth isn't the key, but financial stability is important. She says financial literacy guidance from nonprofits is a good place to start. She says when families get ahead of the situation by setting spending goals aligned with their income, they have a better sense of autonomy in this area.
People feel better about their finances when they feel that they have some choice in where their money's coming and going from.
Lastly, Powell says family members can't take daily communication for granted. Saying hello to each other every day or occasionally asking how things are going can help, but Powell says there's more you can do. That includes the often shared piece of advice of being an active listener.
Being an attentive and curious communicator is a great way to show love for people.
This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
Oregon state lawmakers are considering a bill to remind Oregonians that businesses cannot actually be cashless. A 2022 state law requires businesses to accept cash, and Senate Bill 1176 would require the Bureau of Labor and Industries to put together a public education campaign. There are a few exceptions, like for online shops, membership-only stores, and the Moda Center. Advocates say accepting cash is important because without it, businesses can exclude young people from purchasing things since they may not have a credit or a debit card. One person's letter of opposition to the bill said that, as a small business owner, they operate cashless to discourage break-ins. Instead, they say the state should stop insurance companies from hiking rates on small businesses every time one of their windows gets broken. The bill passed the Senate last month with bipartisan support and had a work session in the House last week. If passed, consumers could file a complaint with Bully if a business refuses to take cash.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, May 5th, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes me, Dave Johnson, the producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Sherry Meredith. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edwin J. Vieira, Brian Bull, Eric Galatis, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members, lovely folks like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
Welcome to Coast Range Radio. I'm Michael Gasco. It is Ocean Week here at Coast Range Radio HQ. You know, all of us in the Northwest love our ocean, but we often don't show it the love that it truly deserves. Ocean conservation is chronically underfunded and underprioritized, but the newly funded Oregon Ocean Alliance is aiming to change that and bring much-needed attention and resources to our ocean and coastal ecosystems. To talk about all that and more, I'm joined by two great guests, Annie Merrill of Oregon Shores and Joe Liebezeit of Bird Alliance of Oregon. They are also co-chairs of the Oregon Ocean Alliance. Real quick, before we get started, you can find all of our shows for free on any podcast app or at bit.ly/crrpodcast. My show email is coastrangeradio@gmail.com. Okay, Annie Merrill and Joe Liebezeit, welcome back to Coast Range Radio.
Thanks, Michael.
Hi, thanks so much for having us.
I'm so happy to have you both back. Before we get into specific campaigns and legislation, and we are going to get into some specific pieces of legislation that you